laughter surged up around me. I flailed about with my knife, hacking and chopping at the woody talons as the water rose up and subsumed me. Bubbles burst from my lips, carrying my screams to the surface as they dragged me down into the shadows and mud beneath the old mill. I could barely make out the forms of my attackers in the murk. They were everywhere, clawing, biting, striking. I stabbed and cut as we roiled in the dark, even when my vision started to go black. I'd killed one Sylvaneth. I could kill others. But there were too many of them, and they didn't need to breathe. I was pummeled into the mud, straining for breath, set to be buried among the rotting support beams, when something reached down and snatched me loose of my attackers. I hit the air so hard my lungs almost collapsed. And then I was rolling across the floor, gasping and heaving. My knife was still in my hand, heavy with sap. The old woman in the tree leaned down, eyes gleaming like haglights.
Apologies. They could not contain their exuberance. They are still but infants, and new to the song.
I spat swamp water and tried to speak, but only a hoarse growl emerged. She tittered and prodded me with a branch claw.
You are resilient. That is good. He likes prey that fights most of all. Not like us. We prefer you to be still and silent when we make mulch of you. Too much struggling only damages the roots.
I rose to my feet, knife flashing. She caught my hand easily, held it, began to squeeze. I felt the bones of my hand creak as she looked over me.
You are not ready to receive our mercy, I think. You do not understand what awaits you, yet. When you do, you will come back. And then...
I heard the bugling call of a stag, or something mimicking it. The call echoed over the swamp. She fell silent, as faces that were not turned away, and trills of disappointment quavered on the air. She released me.
And then what? I said, as I tried to rub some feeling back into my hand. But there was no answer.
The treekin had vanished, and so had she. Thankful as I was, I didn't think I'd scared them off. No, I knew in my gut that whatever had pursued me from the manor had also sent the Sylvaneth fleeing. Just like the last time. Just like Fulda had said. I didn't know what it meant, but I intended to find out.
Chapter 13. Festival.
The celebration was still going on by the time I reached town, sopping wet and wrung out. I wanted nothing more than to sleep, but I wasn't planning on doing so on the street or in a stable. I wanted to be inside and out of the rain, somewhere warm. I hadn't been really warm in days, and it was my driving motivation at that moment. I didn't know whether the stag's head had rooms, but I intended to find out. I passed the paper eel, abandoned, crushed, and stamped into fluttering ruin. Strange decorations hung from roof edges and doorways, corn husks and brambles twisted up into an approximation of a pair of what I thought were antlers. They weren't everywhere, but those places that did not have them were dark and shuttered. Moss lanterns dangled by chains from the edges of nearby rooftops, and their flickering radiance made the shadows dance and the rain glisten jade. The smell of freshly butchered eel stank up the narrow streets, and I saw children streaking their faces with hunt masks made from mud and ash. Wooden cages containing leopard eels, wolf rats, and other verminous beasts sat on the backs of carts and wagons, surrounded by masked men and women. The creatures hissed, shrieked, and howled as their captors tormented them with barbed poles or torches, stoking their fury. A masked man, stinking of booze, caught me by the shoulders. I nearly gutted him. He didn't notice.
"Come to join the hunt, brother," he said in slurred tones. "We've got a bounty this night. Beasts aplenty for the huntsman's bower."
I extricated myself with mumbled apologies. The animals in their cages glared at me, their eyes mad and savage, and resigned. I didn't like that look. It reminded me too much of what I saw in the mirror sometimes. As I trudged away through muddy streets, I wondered what the huntsman's bower was. A place? A turn of phrase? There was an itch of fury under my exhaustion. I didn't like being chased, being made a fool of. The Sylvaneth were obviously holding a grudge. The Treekin were famous for it. Whatever nonsense they'd spouted, this was about the one I'd killed. They would torment me, and then move in to finish things. I wasn't scared. I didn't get scared. Not really. Moments of animal panic, perhaps. Like what I'd felt on the bridge. But fear wasn't really in me these days. If they wanted me, they could come and get me. Even as I thought about it, I knew I was lying to myself, telling myself what I wanted to hear, rather than what was. It wasn't just the Sylvaneth, whatever I wanted to think. A part of me wanted to run, to leave Wald, leave Mern, leave it all, to go back to the fastness, back to the life I'd made for myself. But I didn't like running. I never had. Cowards don't last wearing the azure. If you pick up the hammer, best be willing to swing it, one of Cassian's favorite sayings. I'd never been afraid to swing a hammer or bust skulls in the God-King's name. More than that, I enjoyed it. I had always enjoyed it. A hard truth, and one I'd come to understand more in the years since I'd cast the hammer aside. I'd made grist of Sigmar's enemies for the mills of heaven. I had burned towns like Wald to the ground in the name of Azir, in the name of order and of justice. But what justice was there in this world?
There is no justice, only the hunter and the hunted.
The voice cut through me. I thought at first that it was my own, but there was a cruel resonance to it, as if it were echoing out of some vast, deep place, through the ground, up through the soles of my feet. I turned, feeling again the wash of hot breath across my neck. My knife was out before I put two thoughts together.
The prey bears his teeth as the hunter draws near.
The voice wasn't just deep, but slick, like lantern oil spreading on water. I could feel its amusement as I turned back and forth in the rain, on an empty street. I didn't recognize the street. That was no surprise. In the rain and the dark, I'd got turned around. Or maybe the town had swallowed me up. I spotted the dog a moment later. It watched me from an alleyway, all but hidden in a drape of shadow. Just a vague impression of an animal. Without thinking, I took a step towards it, and it retreated noiselessly. I paused. There was a smell on the air, like flowers just on the edge of rot. A woof of sound, soft, made me turn back. Another dog. This one stood beneath a moss lantern, bathed in green light. It seemed wrong. No, it was wrong. A dog that did not look like a dog ought to look.
Will you run for me again?
Who are you? I asked.
You know who I am.
The dog's skin moved in the light. It twisted and cracked as the beast took a step towards me, jaws sagging to reveal teeth like splinters of broken wood. It exhaled, and again I smelled the stink of almost rotten flowers.
Will you run for me again?
I heard a splash of someone stepping in a puddle, and a soft curse. A wash of moss light nearly blinded me, and through stinging eyes I saw a guard approaching.
Something I can help you with,
he growled. He had the lantern in one hand, and his other on the hilt of his sword. He peered at me.
I don't know you.
I don't know you either, I said. The guard frowned.
You being smart?
Not at the moment. I turned back. The dogs were gone. So was the voice. I realized my heart was pounding. I wondered if they had ever been there in the first place. I rubbed rain out of my face. The guard raised his lantern.
Who are you? You aren't from around here.
I interposed a hand between my eyes and the light.
Just a traveler. Got turned around, looking for the stag's head. No good for vagrants there, the guard said. Your sort isn't welcome in Wald.
I have money. It was the wrong thing to say. The guard's eyes took on a sly glint.
How much?
I did a quick calculation. A wide net made quick work. Enough to reward someone for pointing me in the right direction, I said meaningfully. The guard licked his lips.
Down that street. Take a left.
He held out his hand. I fished out a few coins and handed them over. The guard counted them slowly, his grin widening. It was likely more money than he earned in a month. The coins vanished. He looked at me.
I know you now. You're the one the sheriff took to see his lordship.
He frowned.
You look like shit. Go for a swim with the eels? Something like that. I'm looking for someone. His name is Mern.
He scratched his chin.
He tried to kill his lordship.
So I hear. What can you tell me about it?
Why should I tell you anything?
I rattled my coin pouch. He considered the matter, likely wondering whether he could just take it off me. Something told him that was a bad idea. He looked around.
Mern ambushed his lordship during a hunt. Tried to open him, split to spout. Didn't quite manage it, though. More's the pity. You don't care for his lordship? His eyes went flat.
I didn't say that.
My mistake. When?
Maybe I shouldn't be talking to you after all.
Maybe not. I paused. His lordship asked me to look into the matter. Any help you could give, well, it'd be appreciated. He grunted.
A few weeks ago, Mern's been hiding ever since.
Weeks, I said, around the time the coin had come. And you haven't found him?
Once or twice. Wald's bigger than it looks, and he's got friends.
And his lordship has enemies. The guard grinned.
You might say that.
I handed over another coin.
Know any of them by name?
The guard made the coin vanish.
No.
Fair enough. I held up another coin. You hear a name, maybe you let me know first, eh? There's plenty more where this came from. He took the last coin and weighed it speculatively.
Why you want Mern? He do something.
Tried to kill me. He laughed.
He's got the worst luck.
Better than some. I left the guard to his newfound wealth and made my way to better-lit streets. As I stepped from one to another, a burst of drunken laughter filled the space around me. Hunters cavorted in the street, stamping the mud, wearing antlered crowns on their heads. They charged each other, crashing together to fall in the mud, as onlookers howled in merriment. I avoided the rumpus and went to a nearby cistern. They were scattered throughout the town, one of the remnants of what Wald could have been. I scooped some water out of one of the basins that jutted from it. It was clean. The masons who'd devised them had created some form of purifying mechanism that scraped the water free of all but the basest sediment. I splashed my face and neck and ran my dripping hands through my hair, trying to cleanse myself.
You look like you fell in a swamp.
I straightened, water dripping down my clothes. Deshler lounged nearby, beneath an overhang, a cheroot clutched between her teeth. The tip glowed cherry red as she puffed it.
What are you doing out here? I asked.
She motioned to the drunks.
Enjoying the festivities for a bit, before I head home.
They'll be hunting a blinded leopard eel through this part of town in a few moments.
Sounds interesting.
Always is.
Smoke? Deshler said, extending a cheroot. I took it and joined her beneath the overhang. She looked me up and down.
So, what happened?
I met his lordship. I took the spark stone she proffered and scraped my thumbnail across it, eliciting a flare of heat. I puffed on my cheroot until it lit.
He's looking for my friend as well, turns out.
Deshler took her spark stone back and said nothing. I studied her.
Funny running into you here, I said, even though it wasn't.
Word had already got around about my encounter with Fulda and my ride with Sepesh.
Do you want that second comet I owe you?
Not yet, she said. Haven't had much chance to ask around.
We stood in silence for a time, smoking our cheroots. A band of children in harvest masks raced past in pursuit of a stray dog. Not one of the ones I'd seen earlier. The dog was howling in fear and pain. The boy in the lead clutched a sickle, already wet with the animal's blood. Deshler spat as they vanished into the rain.
Little bastards.
They teach them early, hereabouts, I said. She nodded and spat again, as if she were trying to get the taste of something out of her mouth.
Harvest and hunt, she said.
Meant to ask earlier, what does that mean? Deshler straightened and gave me a funny look.
Thought you didn't care about such things.
She puffed on her cheroot, putting a momentary wall of smoke between us. Maybe I'm curious about the local customs. Deshler laughed.
I doubt that.
You'd be wrong. I took a drag on the cheroot. Where's the huntsman's bower? She stopped laughing.
Why do you want to know?
No reason.
Then I got no reason to say.
She pushed away from the wall.
I'll keep an ear out, though, and you keep that coin, Andy.
I watched her go, hunched and swaying, as if she were still aboard her skiff. I sat there a moment longer, until the cheroot was no longer enough to warm me. Then I headed back to the Stag's Head. Gint was right where I'd left him, still playing with his cards. He looked up as I sat down, but made no comment on my appearance. Back so soon? He said. He fanned his cards out in a broad sweep and flipped them over, one at a time. Lord Wald invited me for a chat. I didn't mention what I'd seen or heard on the walk back. It wasn't that I didn't want to. I simply couldn't. Gint gave a low whistle.
Aren't you the fancy one? He say anything interesting?
Nothing you need to worry about. Gint chuckled and nodded.
No, I suppose not. He looked around. What now?
Now I need some sleep.
Sounds good. I'll take the hearth and you can take the table.
I was thinking I might rent a room. Given that I'll be staying here a while. I put the pouch of coins his lordship had given me down on the table. Gint stopped playing with his cards and eyed it with interest.
That sounds like a lot of money.
It's a retainer.
From Lord Wald? Gint said doubtfully. Why?
I shrugged and went to the bar. The silver-haired woman was wiping it down, trying hard not to look in our direction. Then so were most of the patrons. Word travelled fast in places like this. She didn't look up when I knocked on the bar. I want a room, I said.
No rooms, she replied, still not looking at me. I'll sleep in the stable.
She laughed like I'd said something funny.
No stables.
Attic?
You deaf,
one of the men at the bar growled.
She said there's no room here.
I know what she said. I think she's mistaken. I didn't look at him, but I could see him well enough out of the corner of my eye. He looked like he was spoiling for a fight. That was fine. After the night I'd had, so was I.
I'll not have you cause trouble in here, she said.
Chairs scraped back at her words. I counted two of them. I cracked my neck and stepped back just as the first one threw a punch. I caught his wrist and twisted about, driving my own blow into his kidney. He yelped, high and thin. I tripped him and sent him face first into the bar. The second man tried to grapple me. I boxed his ears and he stumbled to his knees. Before he could get up, I had my knife to his throat. His eyes got wide, and he froze. The music died away as I became the center of attention.
I'd like a room, I said again.
Gint? I'm not fussy. I'm happy to share, Gint said. He was grinning widely.
One room, then, please. She licked her lips. Her eyes flicked up, away from me. I didn't turn around. I knew who I'd see.
Give him a room, Fulda said.
She nodded jerkily, and I took my knife from the man's throat. I sheathed it and turned. Very hospitable of you, I said. Fulda had an ugly look on his face. I gave him a broad smile.
Careful you don't stoke those coals too hot, Gint murmured.
Let him burn, I said.
Our room proved to be in what had once been an attic space, just beneath the eaves. In the light of the candle we'd been provided, I took in a bare triangle of wood. Rain slithered through the cracks in the tiles above, plopping into carefully arranged pots, jugs, and tureens. Damp patches of thatch shifted audibly in the spots where the tiles had been replaced.
Wet, I said.
No mice, though, Gint countered.
Plenty of bedbugs. I kicked one of the straw pallets, and something scuttled out of sight. I'd slept on worse.
The room was mostly empty, save for the pallets, a rough table, and a clay jug. There were bedpans as well, stacked under the table. The bedpans were rusty and thin as paper in spots. I figured it'd be safer to piss out the single circular window that occupied the far wall. A chimney breast provided some heat, though we had no fireplaces of our own.
I learned a fair few things while you were out making new friends, Gint said.
He sat back on his pallet and shuffled his cards.
They were only too happy to talk to me after you left. Funny, that.
I unrolled my bedroll over the pallet, hoping it would keep out the worst of the vermin.
Maybe they felt sorry for you.
He smiled.
Maybe I'm just that charming, or you're that charmless.
Do you want to hear what I learned?
I don't know. Do I?
You might. He set his cards aside.
They say that there are barges due in the next few days. Prison barges. From the fastness.
So? I rolled over and faced the wall. Gint sighed.
I thought it was interesting, at any rate.
You thought wrong. I pinched out the light, plunging the room into darkness.
Chapter 14. Pender. I was somewhere green, a harsh, sharp green, smelling of flowers and mud. The green of thorny briars and razor leaves. The green of deep wells and mossy stones, the green of forgotten places. I tried to move, but couldn't. My arms, my legs, nothing worked. A soft, sweet smell filled my nose, and my mouth tasted of blackberries. Something I couldn't see cooed gently in my ear as brambles caressed my cheek. I felt blood spill down my chin. The constriction grew worse, the thorns biting deep, tearing through my clothes, my flesh, into the soft, red recesses of me. Brambles flexed against me like snakes, as the splinter mouths twisted into clownish smiles, too wide and jagged by far. They whispered endearments as they bent themselves towards me, splinter teeth worrying at me, I felt my flesh rip like parchment. Something reached inside me, plucking at the pulsing, thumping sweetmeats within. I tried to writhe, to voice some final protest, but the only sound was the wet crinkle of my body as it was emptied of all that it contained. I tried again, and my eyes opened, just as Gint made ready to shake me.
"I'm awake,"
I said. My voice was barely a croak. He looked down at the knife in my hand and swallowed.
"So I see. Do you always sleep with steel in your hand?"
"Do you not?" There was a sort of light, watery and grey though it was, pouring in through the round window. It crept across the floor, revealing the dismal extent of our lodgings. I rose and sheathed my knife.
"I've never been that afraid in my life, I'm happy to say."
My clothes had mostly dried, and I pulled them back on after a cursory sniff. I didn't smell any worse than the rest of Wald, so I reckoned it was acceptable. "It's not fear," I said. "It's experience. We're not in the city anymore."
"No, that is evident. Do you remember seeing that last night?"
Gint pointed to the table. Something made of wood and corn husk sat there. "No," I said softly. The shape reminded me of something. I reached for it, but Gint got to it first. He picked it up.
"Looks rather like a stag, don't you think?"
"I don't know what it looks like." He tossed it onto the floor and kicked it out of sight.
"No, neither do I. Tonight I think we should shove the table against the door, keep our hosts to their side of the fence, eh?"
I nodded. I hadn't heard anyone come in. I must have been more tired than I thought. Everything still ached from the night before, but I was hungry more than anything. Gint looked me up and down.
"You look tired."
"I am tired and hungry, but I've got things to do."
"No rest for the wicked, eh?"
Gint said, grinning. I laughed. "You're one to talk."
"I know of what you speak, Haran."
He rose to his feet.
"Still, you're right. Why waste the day lounging in luxury when we could be seeing the sights?"
Downstairs, the common room was quiet. The fire burned low, and the Trogoth was silent in its pit. The few patrons were studiously ignoring everything but their drinks. Most looked like death warmed over. There was little as far as breakfast on offer at the bar. A few comets bought us day-old bread, a bit of cheese, and tea made from chicory root and crushed flowers. Filling enough, if unsatisfying. Gint complained even as he ate. I ignored him.
"What's the plan?"
he asked, gnawing a rind of cheese. "Shouldn't you be looking for your bride-to-be?" He shuddered.
"Have you seen the women around here? I'd rather marry an eel."
"Whatever makes you happy." I rose to my feet. "Just leave me out of it." He followed me to the door.
"Are you sure you won't let me help? I can be quite handy when I put my mind to it."
I looked at him. I was tired of his wheedling. And as the old saying went, many hands made for swift work. I wanted to get out of Wald. That meant I had to find Mern.
"You want to help?"
"I'm offering, aren't I?" "Fine." I caught the front of his coat and dragged him close. If in the course of your day you happen to find out anything about a place called the Huntsman's Bower, I'd be obliged if you'd let me know.
And what's the Huntsman's Bower?
If I knew that, I wouldn't need your help now, would I?
I let him go. See you tonight, he called after me. The air was damp with drizzle and tasted faintly of mould. I pulled my coat tighter about me and strode into the street. Music was playing somewhere, and several drunks, their masks askew, wandered the streets, singing a ballad of the green-tide kingdoms. Vendors sold steaming bowls of broth to keep off the chill of the morning damp, or nebulous meats, chopped and rolled in flour and fried in lard. The town wasn't quite bustling, but it was busy. I wasn't going anywhere in particular. I wanted to get a feel for Wald before I started tearing the place apart. In the light of day, it sprawled around me like a thicket, denser in some places than others. Here and there I saw signs of recent fires, blackened beams, scorched stone, and in places the greenery that was so lush elsewhere was thin. The further away from the tavern I drew, the more signs of what must have been the original village I saw. Stone foundations, the remains of the blockhouses that would have sheltered the loggers and engineers who always came first. I turned a corner and a tangle of shops surrounded me, the sorts of places villages of any significant size had. An apothecary's shack nestled against a leatherworker's lean-to. I could hear the steady ring-beat of a blacksmith's hammer echoing over the rooftops, and the whinnying of the shaggy ponies that the locals used to pull their carts. But there was blood on the streets, and the smell of death was thick in the air. The bodies of slaughtered animals were being butchered over troughs, their still wet bones stacked at intersections. I narrowly avoided being splashed with mud as a still-twitching wolf-rat was dragged out from under a boardwalk by iron hooks and ropes, its killer clambering into the light with a triumphant shout. I spied an old woman sitting on an overturned bucket, crafting an antler sigil out of bone and brambles. Her fingers moved deftly, and she smoked a pipe as she worked. Children chased one another with freshly flensed eel jaws as they ran shrieking underfoot. I recognized the eelmonger's boy among them. I made my way to the road agent's offices, but found them closed and shuttered. Another of the antler sigils hung from the door. I put it down. It was only a little thing, but it had a weight greater than its size. Or maybe that was just my imagination. I heard the thud of great hooves as I looked at it, smelled the rank odor of my pursuer of the previous night. What had Fulda said? You've been marked. Questions rattled in my head like wasps in an iron pot. I wasn't sure I wanted the answers. In fact, I was sure I didn't. What I wanted was to find Mern and do what I'd come here to do. Then I wanted to leave the swamp and never come back. I tossed the sigil into the street and turned away. There were more of them on the buildings all around. I got the feeling that someone was trying to tell me something, or maybe not. Who knew how these people thought? I decided to find Deschler. Even if she hadn't learned anything yet, there were things she could tell me. Mern trying to kill Lord Wald seemed like the sort of thing that would be common knowledge in a place like this. The Mern I remembered wouldn't have tried such a thing on his own, and the guard had implied that he wasn't the only one who'd wanted Lord Wald dead.
It made me wonder why Deschler hadn't thought to mention the matter. Made me think that she wasn't as uninvolved in local politics as she'd claimed. I followed the smell of water around the corner and out of the street. In the daylight, this part of the canal looked smaller. It was overlooked by weather-beaten statues of gods and heroes. A statue of Sigmar Heldenhammer that I hadn't noticed the day before presided over the assemblage, as was his right. The god-king knelt on his cracked plinth, as if weary from battle, leaning against the haft of his hammer. Moss crept over the stone, hiding the celestial sigils carved into it, and his face had been worn away, reduced to nothing by the rain and time. He wore a crown of antlers, and something that stank like blood had been smeared onto it, though whether in an act of desecration or veneration, I couldn't tell. I stared at the statue, grateful that it had no face. The jetty sagged on rotting pylons. Deschler's skiff was nowhere in sight. A clink of metal made me glance back. Two men stood behind me, gripping cudgels. A third stepped into view opposite me, on the other side of the statue. Then two more, cutting me off from the rest of the docks. They were dressed in patchwork leather and stained clothes, looking as lean and nasty as jackals. Greywater Fastness was full of such men, always looking to make comets the easy way, by taking them out of someone else's pocket. It was no different here, I supposed. "It's broad daylight," I said. I knew who'd sent them without asking. I'd dropped a stone in a still pond the night before, and these were the first ripples. Five was more than I'd been expecting, though. Caspar Gunno would have only sent one. Me. Three of them came in a rush, moving fast. A cudgel caught me on the shoulder, numbing my arm. I drew my knife with my good hand and slashed out, driving a second attacker back. As he retreated, I lunged forward, driving my shoulder into the chest of the third and bowling him over. The street was too narrow for a fight like this, too close to the water. They had all of the advantages. I needed to get away, somewhere more open. I ducked my head and ran. The leg breakers gave chase. Punters and vendors yelped and squalled as I pushed through the morning crowd, knife in hand, looking for a way out. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of my pursuers angling to cut me off. I pointed at him and called out, "Stop! Thief!" The magic words in any market square. Hands were suddenly reaching for the leg breaker from every direction. He cursed and fought, trying to escape the mob of concerned citizens. I wished him luck. I'd once seen a crowd like this pull down an unlucky cutpurse and stomp him to death in their frenzy. I kicked an overeager fruit seller somewhere ripe and spilled the man's cart. Fruits and vegetables of all shapes and hues spilled across the rain-slick cobbles, along with the merchant's money box. Comets and motes bounced gleaming into the gutters, as the fruit seller wailed like a damned soul. People bent, snatching at the coins. I didn't stick around to watch the ensuing scrum. I rounded a corner and stepped back against the wall. The street was a narrow, winding path, curving beneath a roof of overhanging balconies and washing lines. I caught a whiff of something sickly sweet, and thought I saw something move into the open at the other end of the street. something taller than a man, with a crown of antlers. But it was gone the moment I tried to focus on it. Footsteps drew near, running now. I selected a handy chunk of wood from the ground and waited. The legbreaker was close, cursing and panting in the same breath. He'd be the youngest of the quintet, or the newest member. Either way, the one with the most to prove. That was why he'd given chase without waiting for the others. That was always the way. The young and stupid ran in where the old and cunning feared to tread. As his shadow stretched across the street, I tensed and sprang. I hit him hard, and he went down to one knee, shaking his head like a pole-axed gyroc. I lifted what was left of the chunk of wood and brought it down again. It crumbled in my grip, but he fell with a soft, whining groan. I kicked him for good measure and turned, just as a second man charged towards me, cudgel held low. I caught the first blow on my numbed shoulder and bit back a yelp. This one was bigger than the first, heavier and grizzled. He ducked back as I swung at him.
"Don't be stupid," he growled.
"Too late for that." I tackled him, catching him around the midsection. My momentum carried us backwards, into the wall on the opposite side of the street. He grunted and tried to break my hold. I kept my head down and started punching. I found the rhythm quickly, and his kidneys a few moments after that. He folded up with a disgruntled sigh and sank down low enough for me to slam a knee into his nose. He fell over and I stomped on him a few times. Always kick a man when he's down. That way he's less likely to get up again. Another bit of wisdom bestowed unto me by Cassian. 2 down, 3 to go.
"He went that way. Come on."
They were close. I ducked down another side street. The little back alleys and passages all tangled back on one another like a rat's warren. A dozen streets were crammed into a space fit only for 2 or 3. The canopy of overhanging roof edges, balconies and makeshift walkways squeezed out the grey light of morning. I coughed, smelling smoke. Old smoke. The stink clinging to the wood. The street was a dead artery. There were marks of fire everywhere, and ash mould clogging the gutters and making strange shapes on the walls. Broken crates and barrels littered the ground. Abandoned stores rose out of the rubbish like derelict ships, some still protected by ragged awnings, heavy with mildew. I paused, listening. I heard rats skittering through the trash, and something else. Voices. No. Echoes. Memories. Dreams. There was green everywhere, growing out of the gutters, poking up beneath the ash and dripping from the roof edges. The street was soft under my feet, and my boots squelched. I heard a growl echo from within a broken crate. I reached for my knife.
"There he is."
I turned, narrowly avoiding the brutal thrust of a cudgel. A third leg breaker had caught up with me.
"Nowhere to go," he panted.
He swung the cudgel in short, sharp arcs, brutal blows designed to cripple. This one knew how to fight, or was simply more cautious after bypassing his fellows.
"Looks that way," I said.
The legbreaker grinned.
"Think that pig sticker is going to help?"
He had a small, carved ruby in place of one of his front teeth, and eyes like a stoat. He tossed the cudgel from hand to hand, quick as thought.
Give up. Come quietly.
Never been one for quiet. The man shrugged.
Have it your way.
He snapped forwards. He was fast, but I was ready. I caught the blow on my forearm and whipped my knife across the legbreaker's belly. The blade was sharp, and it easily cut through the layers of cloth and leather to bite the skin beneath. The legbreaker's eyes widened, and a high, thin sound emerged from his puckered lips. I heard his companions arrive as he started to scream. I don't like killing, normally. I got my fill of it when I wore the Azure. And anyway, Gunnar doesn't pay me enough to kill people. But sometimes you have to make a point. He fell against me, and the knife went in again, almost as an afterthought. Hot wetness spurted, engulfing my forearm. I felt the body twist and twitch, as everything let go at once, and there was another grunting whine. I jerked the knife free, and things spilled out. I leaned back as the dead man slid to the ground, leaving a swath of red down the front of my coat. For a moment, I was somewhere else. I was a decade ago, and a realm away, with another dead man at my feet. Only this one I knew. Had thought I'd known. But in that moment, with the rain beating down, and the hammer heavy in my hands, I realized that I knew nothing at all. Screams echoed from cages of gold and iron, soon drowned out by the cackle of flames and the rumble of thunder. The moment passed quickly. They always did. The two who were left looked at me like I was their worst nightmare. Then they looked at one another and started to edge towards me. I stepped over their friend and went to meet them. "This day isn't going the way you hoped, is it?" I said. "You thought your morning consisted of a nice, quiet beating. Instead, I made a ruckus and killed your friend here. I'm betting Wald isn't big enough that this sort of thing can escape notice." I paused. "I bet the guards are on their way, in fact. That's not going to end well for you."
"You neither,"
a voice said. The two men stopped, looks of relief on their faces. They stepped aside for the newcomer.
"Dabney, Skullo, drag Kushmir somewhere quiet. Get him out of sight until Papasho can bring a night soil cart around."
He was big and ugly. His face had met fists one too many times, and now had a rough, unfinished look to it. I could tell he was the boss from the cut of his clothes. Better quality, but they didn't fit right. He was dressed like he thought a successful man ought to dress, but without any sense of taste or style.
"You beat up my boys pretty good."
"They weren't much of a challenge," I said. He looked me up and down and smirked.
"Think you're a tough one, do you?"
"Caspar Gunnar thinks I am." As I'd hoped, Gunnar's name carried weight, even out here. The big man blanched slightly and licked his lips.
"Gunnar, you work for him."
He looked like he was starting to regret coming out here. He'd probably expected it to be more entertaining than this. "On occasion?"
"Now?"
"No, I'm here on a personal matter." His relief was palpable. He looked around, trying to regain the advantage.
"So, you beat up my men, kill one of them, and make noise by way of... what? An introduction?"
If you like. I'm not a patient man, and I wanted your attention. He grinned sourly.
Well, you've got it. Now give me one good reason not to have you dropped in the swamp.
Professional courtesy.
You killed one of my men.
I lightened your organization of dead weight. He preened at that. He liked that someone associated with Gunnar thought that he had an organization. In reality, I figured them for bandits who were too scared to hide in the swamp.
Maybe. Truth to tell, I never liked Cusmere much. You want his job?
I've got my own. I'm looking for someone.
I know a few girls, if that's what you like.
Not a girl.
I got a few men as well.
Mern, I said. Evric Mern. His smile faltered. His eyes widened slightly. He wasn't very good at hiding his feelings.
You want help. It'll cost you.
I saw the walls go up and decided I was done being cordial. What's your name? He frowned.
I don't know if I want to tell you.
Maybe I should ask the sheriff. I smiled.
You probably know that she and I are good friends now.
He flinched. It seemed that information was not new to him. He looked at me.
You can call me Pender. He paused. You really work for Gunnar?
Yes. Let me see your arms, Pender.
Why?
Humor me. I'd had a thought, and I wanted to follow it through. Frowning, he rolled up his sleeves and extended both arms. Plenty of scars, no tattoos. That made me feel better, though I couldn't say why. You know Mern, I said.
Maybe.
I want to speak to him. Where is he?
Don't know.
The way he said it told me he was lying. I decided to ask more forcefully. He wasn't ready for it. Lazy, maybe. Or perhaps he thought the proximity of his men would protect him. The punch caught him in the abdomen, and he folded over my waiting arm, wheezing. He was soft in the middle, too much easy living. I caught his hair and jerked his head up.
That's a shame. Caspar Gunnar would be grateful if you found out. You said this was personal.
He spluttered. Even so, I yanked on his scalp. Someone in this misbegotten village must know where Mern is. You're going to find them for me, or I'm going to be forced to get creative. You understand?
I understand.
Good. I helped him stand. I'm at the Stag's Head. I patted him with a bloody hand. I look forward to our next meeting. I left him there, bloody handprint on his cheek. As I departed, I thought I heard something laugh. Or maybe it was the distant thunder of galloping hooves. Chapter 15. Red Seed. I didn't go back the way I'd come. I found another cistern and washed my hands and coat as best I could. I wasn't the only person wandering around town with blood on him, but I felt better with it gone. No need to risk undue attention from the guards, even if it was on his lordship's payroll. When I was finished, I wandered back towards the far edge of town, where solid ground gave way to water and reeds, and the houses rested on stilts rather than stone foundations. There wasn't much here. The town slid into the water with new shacks built atop sunken roofs, or on the anchored shapes of barges and scuttled boats. Trees stretched over the fallen slopes, casting deep shadows onto the water. It was quieter on this side of town. There weren't many people here. A few sat on porches or on the docks and jetties, playing instruments, cooking or preparing meat. No one paid me any attention, or if they did, they kept it to themselves. I figured I'd satisfactorily impressed the need for urgency on Pender. As far as he knew, I was trouble. The sooner he helped me, the sooner I was gone. Granted, he might try to kill me again, but I had him down as the type who wouldn't want to annoy someone like Caspar Gunno. Either way, something would happen. The key to finding someone who doesn't want to be found is to shake as many trees as possible and see what falls out. Myrne was definitely hiding somewhere in town, and probably with help. Maybe Pender, maybe Deschler, or someone else. That he was hiding from his lordship was obvious. Not from me, though, which made things easier. I was still in the dark as to why he'd risked sending for me. I knew he wouldn't have done it without good reason. Maybe he expected me to help him escape whatever mess it was that he'd obviously got himself into. Or maybe a trap, just not the one you'd thought. I closed my eyes as the words sifted through my head. So soft they might have been my own thoughts. If I'd been anyone other than who I was, I might have assumed just that. But Cassian had taught me how to hear when something was using my voice as camouflage. Demons were tricky things. You think me so small as that? I didn't reply. I kept walking. I heard the ghost of an echo of great hooves plodding in my wake. I didn't turn around. I knew there'd be nothing there. I shaded my eyes against the glare on the water and peered across the swamp. The shrine sat at the top of the island,